Whether you're walking barefoot in the snow, escaping for a walk on your lunch break, or trekking halfway across the world for a lush view, it feels good when we unplug and connect to our simpler side. If only our everyday nutrition were that simple. It's time to simplify your wellness routine with Ka'Chava. Getting the nutrition we need from that graveyard of supplements in our cupboards is often overcomplicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, keep it simple with just 2 scoops that have the highest quality ingredients. Simplify your nutrition at ka'chava.com and use code NEWS. New customers get $20 off an order of 2 bags or more now through January 31st. That's Ka'Chava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code NEWS.
Upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose Masterforce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from Masterforce today. Check out all our Masterforce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of Hard Money Dispatch. Today's guest has been in Bitcoin since 2010. He is the CTO of San Salvador-based Sats Capital, and he's also the founder of the Emerald Foundation, which is working on institutional-grade custody solutions for banks, governments, enterprises, family offices, and so on. His name is Greg Mikeska, and I'd like to introduce him to talk about the Emerald Foundation, their inaugural partners, and all the other exciting stuff he's working on in the Bitcoin space. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brian. Great to be here.
So why don't you start off, whichever one you want, either tell us about Emerald Foundation and what it's doing, or Sats Capital, whichever one you'd like to start with.
Absolutely. So I'm the CTO of Sats Capital. We're working with asset issuance on the Liquid network in El Salvador. El Salvador's got some really friendly legislation in that regard. And so people are flocking to El Salvador to issue shares of their companies on the Liquid network. So the Emerald Foundation is also working with technologies that were started by Blockstream. I'm a really big fan of Blockstream and the work they've done in the Bitcoin ecosystem. The Emerald is looking to establish standards for use of sidechains as custody mechanisms for large organizations like banks, financial organizations like banks, governments too, investment companies like a Fidelity might be a good someone I'd like to have on our side. They're very forward thinking in the Bitcoin ecosystem as well. So we've got we're starting with a nonprofit foundation that will be deciding the standards and establishing the standards for the software. We're starting with 2 enablement partners. One is Intaglio Architecture in the US, and the other is Emerald Labs in El Salvador. And Emerald Labs will be our Central American and South American partner, and Intaglio Architecture will be our North American partner and Europe. Basically, these companies will be authoring software to adhere to the standards that the Emerald Foundation establishes. And these are set up to solve a set of problems that organizations like banks face currently and will face, will continue to face as crypto begins to play a larger and larger role in the financial system.
Very cool. So any examples of what specifically Emerald Labs is trying to achieve and why?
Absolutely. So the solution aims to achieve a system by which the bank has a So Bitcoin is, let me start from the beginning. Bitcoin is sort of analogous to the internet for our purposes, right? It's a public network that anyone can access. And if you just, if you imagine that everyone's computer was plugged directly into the internet, you can understand the amount of risk that you would undertake by connecting that way. It would be a tremendous risk because there's no barrier preventing people from connecting across the internet and attacking you. So the solution that we have on the internet for this, for normal internet traffic, is a LAN, a local area network. This allows a safety layer that where inside the LAN, that traffic is privileged, so you can transact from machine to machine information without worrying about the attack surface as much as you do with traffic from outside of the LAN. So the Emerald takes this concept and uses a concept invented by Blockstream called a sidechain, which is a blockchain that is connected to the Bitcoin main chain and allows transactions within the sidechain without actually moving money on the Bitcoin blockchain. And those transactions on the sidechain itself between users of the sidechain, so in this case, that would be between users of a specific bank, are authenticated and authorized by a group of participants called functionaries, in our case. So let me be clear that Blockstream is not, their sidechains are not currently used one for, they're not assigned one sidechain per bank. That's the part of the paradigm that we're introducing. They operate a sidechain called the Liquid Network that's used to transact between exchanges or banks, large financial institutions. But our idea is to allow the financial institution's clients to use this private network to communicate between the clients and the bank. So one of the risk surfaces, one of the attack surfaces that is relevant today, but it's going to become even more relevant as the technology.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Advances is the fact that a bank like Main Street Bank, just a neighborhood bank, is going to be trusting some other company in order to have custody over its funds. Okay, so there is a tremendous, this creates this creates a problem that I call the meta custodian problem. So Main Street Bank is a custodian, and the custodian custodial provider that they use would be called a meta custodian because they hold funds for many many private custodian services, service providers. So these massive repositories of crypto will become a honeypot for attackers through various attack methodologies. As we've seen with exchanges so far, one of those popular attack vectors is phishing. Another attack vector that will pop up will be employment attack vectors. So people getting jobs at these large meta custodians with the specific interest in compromising the security of the operation. We respond to this by having each custodian at the base layer of custody, the bank or other organization that that interacts directly with the consumer, we have them contract with multiple what are called functionaries, which are each one being owned and operated by a different security-focused organization. So these organizations will operate validator nodes. They'll operate the bank's official access to the Bitcoin blockchain and possibly other blockchains like the Liquid Network, which is Blockstream's sidechain, because it hosts stable coins. So it would allow the banks to start transmitting using stable coins as the rails for dollar and, for instance, euro denominated transactions. They would be able to use stable coins for that instead of Fedwire. They would also operate liquid network access for the banks. And we think that this is a revenue opportunity for the banks, and that they could pass this revenue onto their customers in the form of something akin to the interest that you have, that you earn for having dollars on deposit with a bank. So yeah.
Interesting. It kind of reminds me of Ripple and their whole MO of trying to create like a Swift alternative, although I know this is more custody based, but it's, you know, it sounds like achieving all that and more, only you don't need the external blockchain, you don't need an XRP token. You can accomplish essentially the same thing, but even better with Bitcoin sidechains. Is that accurate, more or less?
That's right. We think there's a profound benefit to architecting on top of Bitcoin's architecture instead of trying to reinvent the wheel. I also think that Ripple's approach is overly focused on trying to create a case for their own token, whereas feeding back into Bitcoin's network effect, it really does help the entire community. This is part of an evolution towards which we're marching, that we'll see Bitcoin become the backing for the US dollar. And there's also a plan eventually to help Emerald become the architecture that enables this. But that may be a topic for a different podcast, a different instance. Either way, this is all with realization that in order to get to Bitcoin's use as as the everything currency, you have to allow the custody of Bitcoin to safely permeate everything from Stake and Shake and its customers to the banks, to the government. People, I've seen a lot of malignment of people that like me who advocate for bank acceptance of Bitcoin and government acceptance of Bitcoin. I've often heard sentiments that as this technology becomes more and more successful, it becomes more and more centralized because they're worried that the governments are going to dump a whole bunch of Bitcoin on the network and on the market rather, and cause a price crash. The reason that it has to permeate that deeply in order for it to become successful for transactions is that Stake and Shake is a great example of this. So they followed a stepwise process, and they first started accepting Bitcoin for their food. Then they started saving the Bitcoin that they accepted. That was a fairly recent step. I think that was about 2 months ago, 2 or 3 months ago. But just last month, they announced that they are expanding into El Salvador. Now, this is ground-shaking for the economy, because what they're doing is they're looking for a place where...
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Where cattle sale venues accept Bitcoin for beef, so that they can buy beef with Bitcoin that they've taken in all the way across the chain, likely all the way across their franchise, likely. And another benefit is that in El Salvador, they already can pay their taxes using Bitcoin. So that it's giving the government a safe way to store the Bitcoin is instrumental to adoption in the median layers of the ecosystem, because the people who receive the companies that receive the Bitcoin, aside from, you know, keeping a treasury is a great reason to accept Bitcoin, but they also need, even companies need an asset that they can pay their bills with. So that's why adoption at the more financial industrial complex levels of the pie is so important. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So in El Salvador, even a company like Stake and Shake could potentially participate in a circular Bitcoin economy where they accept Bitcoin as payment, and then they both use that as sort of a treasury asset, and then also use it to purchase their supplies, their materials they need for production, and then just creates a circle like that. Do you see this infrastructure you're talking about helping to create that kind of economy elsewhere and ultimately replicate that around the world?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's also another, I'm very passionate about the future of Bitcoin backing the US dollar. that's not on a whole bunch of people's radar, as far as I know. But the miraculous thing about that is that it would make the U.S. dollar the world's largest Bitcoin layer two we've ever seen. So yes, all of this added infrastructure of making it safer for banks to store on behalf of clients, making it safer for retail to store Bitcoin, whether it's in a bank or on its own sovereignly, are all big pieces. Another really big impact for the Emerald project is that once the banks are using the Lightning Network to transact, be it stablecoins or Bitcoin, the retailers will begin transacting. That will set on fire the adoption rate for Lightning in the retail sector, which will de facto make self-sovereign users like you and me automatically be on the same network as the banks. I remember when Trezor was still in development, and one of the early pitches for Trezor, that's still frequently used is the phrase "be your own bank," and it's true because you know back before the Trezor was invented, the TPM hadn't. That everybody's got a chip in your computer that's similar to a Trezor, although having it external is much more hack resistant. But that wasn't the case back when the Trezor was being designed. TPMs were hard to find. All there were HSMs in banks and the SIM card in GSM phones. That was the only secure architecture we had. So it really is a taste of being your own bank. But that really gets leveled up when the bank starts using the public networks and the Lightning Network.
Do you see, or how do you see, switch gears a little bit here, Bitcoin's role in the monetary system? You mentioned one time we were talking previously that you see it like gold, but sort of going in reverse or following a similar process, but
that's right.
In reverse. How do you describe that? You put it better than I do.
Thank you. So yes, we originally were using gold as a currency, and yes, it was gold that was typically coined by the government, right? But so that you had a standardized quantity of it. But we moved from that to having paper that's backed by gold. And then we moved to paper that isn't backed, right? And there was a little stage in there where the paper was a little bit of a hodgepodge because the different states were issuing their own dollars, their own variety of U.S. dollars, right? And the states had their own bills, their own denominations. So we are taking that cycle in reverse. We're heading toward an economy where Bitcoin is used directly as a direct currency. And along the way, we will see a stage where the dollar is issued backed by Bitcoin. And we'll see a stage, we're in the stage right now where the dollar is a bit of a hodgepodge and we've got stable coins issued by different disparate organizations. I think that the stablecoin movement is a part of the process. It's an essential part of the process, even though it's true that holders of stablecoins undertake a vast amount of risk because you're not only risking the value to inflation or instability at the central bank level with some currencies, you might worry. I know we're probably not worried that the Fed is going to recall the dollar this year, but there might be other countries where that's a possibility. So, but either way, you've got the inflation risk of the currency itself, and then you have the risk of the issuer. So you've got a double whammy of risk right now with this patchwork system. But what it's doing is it's sponsoring the familiarization of banks, credit card companies, retailers to the idea. It's familiarizing them with the idea of dealing with money using public-private key pairs, right? So, and Emerald will continue this trend. Yes, a side chain is a little bit less public than the public Bitcoin network. Yes, the banks can make rules about it, but it provides a safety net for people who may not feel totally comfortable. Imagine your grandmother who, all the reasons that she doesn't just want to buy Bitcoin and have a Trezor to own her Bitcoin in. She might start taking advantage of a Trezor paired with her phone so that when she spends money from her bank account, if her day's withdrawal amount or her spend amount over the course of the day was less than $100, then she can approve the spend from her phone. And if it's more than $100, she has to have the Trezor present in order to approve the transaction. But if she loses the Trezor and it's holding coins from this side chain, the bank's side chain, then the bank can issue her a replacement Trezor. Yes, the money is locked until she's able to get to her bank. But that's the same sacrifice you'd make if you lose your debit card. And it provides an infrastructure, a fallback infrastructure, and a customer service experience that the bank faithful of today are accustomed to. And it's a customer service experience that they don't want to sacrifice, and that's what's keeping them from adopting Bitcoin. So it will introduce them to it, and I think they'll fall in love with it.
I remember, you know, this reminds me of, there was a post by Hal Finney on the Bitcoin Talk forum in the early days, maybe 2010 or so, where he said, there's actually a very good reason for Bitcoin banks to exist. And to paraphrase, it was something along the lines of, the base layer can't possibly scale to the whole world to handle all that many transactions. So maybe Bitcoin could become the reserve assets and currencies just issued on top of that. But it sounds like if what you're talking about pans out, there wouldn't even be a need for that necessarily. It would just be the existing banks using this infrastructure, and then dollars could be backed by Bitcoin, and that would be a much simpler sort of outcome.
So yeah, you're right. I think that what we're building is exactly what he predicted, and it's, the nuance is that we used to have gold banks, you know, and then there was a period where I'm trying to look for a verb here for that. They decoupled gold from the dollar, right? So, but there was a time when you could go to specific banks in your hometown to trade your dollars in for gold. And we will, and that day will come again, but this time with Bitcoin.
Very nice. Sounds good. And a lot of people like to say that, but it's usually just sort of an abstract pipe dream. This is the first time I'm hearing about actual stuff being built that could potentially make that a reality one day in the not too distant future. So yeah, that's great.
That's right.
I think now think I'd like to switch gears again. You know, we connected again recently because of a post I made on LinkedIn about MicroStrategy, and I was just joking, saying I wish they would just go bankrupt already, because I'm sick of hearing about, you know, the fears of them being liquidated, and oh no, their net asset value is beneath one. And anytime this happens, every bear market, every cycle, well, I guess there's only been one other cycle this has happened in, but it comes and goes. It's kind of like the quantum computing narrative, which we'll probably get into a little later as well. But what's your take on the MicroStrategy thing and the potential of them having to sell Bitcoin, or their, you know, being over leveraged, the whole business model going defunct, and also how that extends to treasury companies in general?
Absolutely. So I don't think that I don't follow the net asset value theory on this if it's less than one, then that means they're going to, I don't think that means they're going to fail, basically. I follow the liquidation price, and I know it seems like we're hitting hard times because Bitcoin has been around 100,000 for over a year now, right? And we're just south of 100,000 right now, but their liquidation price is below 20,000. I think it was, I can't remember, it was somewhere between 15 to 17,000 is their liquidation price. And I have faith that as long as we stay above the liquidation price, they're going to keep succeeding. You mentioned Bitcoin talk earlier, and that's one of the coolest parts of having been in Bitcoin in 2010, was that Bitcoin talk had great resources on where we're going. That was where I heard this dream of mine the first time, of Bitcoin backing the US dollar. It was predicted on Bitcoin talk. They made abundantly clear that the step right before that starts becoming possible is the...
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Step of strategic reserve, the establishment of strategic reserves in the government and in corporations. That immediately precedes, immediately meaning by about 10 years, maybe, the strategic reserve movement precedes the idea of it becoming a backing resource. And that's because it's with gold. Gold started out pervasive, and in order for it to back paper, it had to be pervasive, right? Matter of fact, in order to get it to stop backing paper, they had to prevent it from being pervasive. That's why they made ownership of gold illegal. That's not a concern for Bitcoin because of things that, I mean, I can go into that if you'd like, but wasn't exactly the question. So go ahead.
Yeah, we did a full circle from talking about MicroStrategy, but no, that's okay. I like getting into to all of this stuff. So that was on the theme of misinformation narratives, as there's always been and always will be in Bitcoin. This cycle really seems to have amplified a lot of them for some reason and creating new ones, even though I thought that by now it would be more legitimized. People would understand more. I mean, with the launch of the ETFs and strategic Bitcoin reserves being established but not funded yet, and you know, stablecoin legislation being passed, I would have assumed that these things would become less prominent or have less credibility. But for some reason, it seems to only have fueled the fire. And another thing that's come up just recently that I keep seeing that I'm also kind of tired of is this whole Zcash thing. Now, Zcash is not new. It was created way back in, I think it was like 2016 when it first launched. And it was along with a wave of other privacy coins in about the same era, you know, Monero and Dash being among the other prominent privacy coins at the time. And Zcash seems to be marketed now, maybe not by the company and team itself, but I've seen it promoted by just some retail people that it's more quantum resistant than Bitcoin and that it's, you know, has the privacy advantage, which is just so important, according to some people, even though that aspect has to be turned on. It's not just by a default as it is with some other private coins like Monero, for example, because it uses zero knowledge proofs as opposed to Monero's ring signatures. That's a whole other topic. But I guess what I'd like to touch on is, why do you think this whole Zcash thing has come up again, and why is it a false idea that privacy is so much better and that Zcash is the next Bitcoin and it's also more quantum secure and all these things? I don't even know where to start.
Sure. No, so that's a great question. First, let's talk about Bitcoin's privacy guarantees. At the base layer, Bitcoin is quite traceable, right? The privacy, though, imbued by the Lightning Network is incredible. And so there used to be a lot of sacrifices that you would have to make in order to, there's a set of guarantees that come with being on the base, on the blockchain, right? Transacting on the blockchain. You can keep your money in a Trezor. All sorts of things that you can, like you can turn the computer off, for instance, things like that, that used to not be true on Lightning. Now, with the newer technologies for Lightning, they support going offline, having your keys stored in a secure medium. The support for these features on Lightning is increasing by leaps and bounds. Now, of course, it will never replace transacting on the main chain, they are separate innovation stacks, if you will, meaning when we build a specific smart contract type using Emerald on the main chain, it will always take, well, at least in the near term for that technology, it will take an implementer like a particular sidechain. I call my sidechains constellations in Emerald, but we can go back to that in a bit. It will take an implementer to carry the benefits of that onto Lightning. But so, working in El Salvador, we've had to grapple with the privacy guarantees that are introduced by Lightning because the government wasn't sure how to feel about that level of privacy. So the the issues with Zcash are that private zero knowledge proofs are thought to be quite private, and they increase quantum resistance because you don't disclose the public key publicly, right? But you do have to disclose the public key to the payee. So so you still are disclosing your pub key, and it could turn into, for instance, personal information issues, like the companies that get hacked, like Coinbase got hacked, and people's personal information was leaked on the darknet. So it's possible that public keys accepted for payment by retailers, if it ever becomes accepted popularly for retail transactions, the retailers you pay could end up leaking your pub keys the same way that personal information gets leaked.
We started talking about the quantum threat. That's a perfect segue, because that's something else I wanted to touch on. There are people out there saying that this is going to be a real threat in 2 years or even less, that quantum computers will actually be able to break ECDSA, which is elliptical curve digital signature algorithm, I believe, the type of encryption that protects Bitcoin wallets. And so if you could crack that, you could then derive a private key from a public key, just taking someone's public address that you can see on the blockchain, for example, and then with that being able to figure out what the private key is and just take the coins from that wallet. Now, there's a lot of nuances there, as you know even better than I do. It's not all that simple, but what some people say, for example, is that when this happens, when this threshold is crossed, then someone out there with access to this powerful quantum computer will just automatically decide to take Satoshi's coins, because those early coins that have never been spent are of a different type, as I understand it. They use a different hash that's somewhat less secure and could, in theory, just be cracked easily. Somebody could just take those coins. And then when that happens, everyone freaks out, market panics, and that just like destroys all faith, and Bitcoin, as well as all of crypto, would just be finished, be cooked right there. So that's a lot to unpack, but maybe start at, you know, just the fact that quantum computers are not that close to being able to run a practical application that could crack this type of encryption. That's point number one. I had to do research on this. Let me just say real quick, I had to do in-depth research on this when I was working for one of the biggest Bitcoin mining companies in the world. We had to create a whole piece on this very subject. And what I learned during that research, and I can back all this up, is the fact that it would take a million plus logical qubits to be able to break ECDSA within an hour or two. But the counter argument to that is that, well, it would only take about 2,000 or 3,000 logical qubits to really break ECDSA in a time frame of several years. I forget how many years. Was it five? It's 2, 3, or 5 years. So in other words, with a million logical qubits, you could derive a private key from a public key just like that in a single day. With 2,000 or 3,000 logical qubits, you could, over the course of several years, running one of these algorithms, Shor's or Grover's algorithm, whatever one it is, you could run that and then eventually be able to break the encryption. However, even that is questionable, because in their current state, quantum computers can only run for a very short period of time. They have high rates of error. They're not stable. There are no practical applications right now for anyone to actually use them in a normal way like we use regular computers. And a question I've never seen asked anywhere really is, who would do this wallet stealing activity? Would it have to be somebody who gets a job at one of the quantum companies or the big tech companies that do work in quantum? Would it be someone who just mysteriously gains access to that? And like, what would be the mechanism? Why would they want to do that? How would they go about doing that, assuming the technology was there? And so, yeah, go ahead, take that whichever way you want.
Yeah. So the you have a good question there about who would do it, but even more importantly, those for instance, talking about Satoshi's original coins, that is not possible because in order for the attack surface that you're talking about is given the public key for a set of Bitcoin, the quantum computer would be able to reverse that public key into a private key so that it could sign new transactions. So just seeing the address on the blockchain is not sufficient because the address is not the public key first, and that's pretty clear, right? But it's not even a hash of the public key. The address is a hash of a hash of the public key. So the only way to obtain a private key using quantum computing is if you are able to obtain the public key for a particular address. And reversing a second order hash is legitimately thought to be impossible. So even with quantum computing, because so much information is lost. So that's the reason that concern is overblown, but that's also a really good reason to choose Bitcoin over any other competitor like a Web3 based competitor that like Ethereum, Solana, Ripple, that employ address reuse because the address, the public key for the address is disclosed every time you transact with one of those currencies. And you can't get away from address reuse with those currencies because the smart contract architecture is intrinsically intertwined with address reuse to the point that that's how the contract, the smart contract, identifies the user. It identifies who it's being transacted.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
With by the public key that's tied to the transaction. So if you own, you can own two separate quantities of Fartcoin is a good example, right? Fartcoin. If you hold Fartcoin, you can hold it with two separate addresses, and they're not transacted together because you send separate signed messages from each private key. So the concern about quantum computing is real, but it applies to currencies that employ address reuse. Because they are intrinsically vulnerable to quantum computing, and even employing a quantum resistant algorithm won't fix it. It'll create a massive cat and mouse game because that where they'll have to rejigger the algorithm every decade or two as quantum computing ramps up, because they can't get away from address reuse, and they end up disclosing the public key all the time, so that the counterparty to the transaction can validate who they're talking to.
Yeah, not to mention the fact that it would take to employ a new quantum resistant hash on Bitcoin would require creating entirely new wallets, and everyone would have to then migrate their coins to these new wallets. And that's the kind of stuff being discussed and developed currently. I don't get how people could not understand this, what you're saying, though. Like, it's always presented in such a simplistic fashion of, like, quantum will be powerful enough, it will crack the encryption, and people can just steal, just crack open the wallet, steal the coins. That's all there is to it. And I almost never see it presented with more nuance than that. It's just simply the computers need this many logical qubits, and then they can do this thing and just crack. There's no nuance in terms of how more advanced the quantum computers have to get in more than just this one metric of qubits. And then there's no nuance on the other side of how the public keys work and how Bitcoin's encryption works. I've never seen discussion of the Bitcoin versus altcoin security. It's always just assumed that everything's the same for the most part. And so, yeah, it's just ridiculous. And this is another one of those narratives that comes up at some point every cycle, but somehow this time it's been amplified like most of the others, as I was saying earlier. And it just keeps getting more out there and more prominent, more urgent. And I guess maybe that's because there has been some legitimate advancement in quantum technology, like Google's Willow chip. But they had a similar announcement like that in 2020. And IBM has made advancements. And these are all very minor things, many orders of magnitude less than what would actually be required in theory if it was all as straightforward as it was presented. It's still orders of magnitude less than what would be necessary. But then the counter to that is people say, well, look at the path of improvement is so dramatic. It's breaking, Moore's Law, where everything, the power doubles every several years or something like that. They're saying, well, it's taking off on a new curve that's, you know, exponential compared to that. And so it's coming. It's right around the corner. It's always just about to happen. But with what you're saying, it's basically, it's more than just overblown. It's entirely inaccurate. And it's not something that we have to worry about anytime soon, possibly ever. Is that correct?
That's right. That's exactly right. And we know that quantum resistant algorithms are not an answer, because we are specifically not talking about quantum mining yet, but that's going to come around. And we had ASIC resistant algorithms for mining, like Scrypt. SCRYPT was the mining algorithm for Litecoin and others. They were attempting to build an ASIC-resistant mining algorithm, eventually we saw Scrypt ASICs come around. They just were designed differently, so it turns into a cat and mouse game. And then once Litecoin stopped being profitable, the people who owned Scrypt miners started attacking various other currencies. They called it profitability mining, but it turned out to look like an attack vector to those blockchains. So all that to say that when you apply the same understanding to quantum technology for attacking signatures, right? You have the quantum mining. So quantum mining of Bitcoin will sponsor the development of democratized quantum computing, I believe. And in doing so, it's going to give everybody and their brother a bazooka that a few decades after they get the machine, they can aim it for a day at a group of Ethereum addresses and use them to get the private keys for those addresses and obtain the money, and then go back to mining Bitcoin with it.
Fascinating. Yeah, you don't see this kind of stuff discussed in a lot of detail on social media very often, at least in my experience. I haven't seen that. It's mostly just the fear-mongering and urgency and doom and gloom and all of that. So, yeah, I think...
Yes. So one of the things that that I think drives this lack of theory going around is that we've moved away from utility tokens. I would not have advised you to hold a bunch of Amber coin or Dash, which was also called Dark coin, right? But during the time when these currencies were in vogue, there was a robust debate about the differences in tokenomics between SHA-256 and Script and other technological differences between the blockchains. Whereas nowadays, most of the industry has gone to investment advice as opposed to technology advice. And so the discussion has just shifted from the technology behind the money to the cyclical discussion of what's about to pump, what's about to dump, what you want to hold on to make a quick buck, and what you should stay away from. But I think that the discussion of the underlying technology is fascinating.
Yeah, and a lot. I thought you were going to say proof of stake when you were mentioning move from technology to money investment. Because I also recall the things like Vertcoin was another script coin that was marketed as being very ASINT resistant, even more so than Litecoin. And it's gone to zero, I think, or close to it. It's delisted on most major exchanges, and like so many others, countless examples of that. But yeah, I thought you were going to say that most of the industry has moved to proof of stake, because that's another thing that's come up over the years, right? Oh, proof of work is too energy intensive, so proof of stake is better for the environment and whatnot, even though that claim in itself is not true, and proof of stake just recreates a fiat central banking type of paradigm where people with the most tokens receive the most rewards, have more influence on the protocol and all of that.
The primary issue, just like you said, it does recreate a fiat type system. Proof of stake does, right? But this fundamentally is because energy, or because Bitcoin, because money in general is a form of energy. So you have kinetic energy, potential energy, and financial energy. And so fiat currencies and proof of stake currencies are essentially counterfeit energy. So Bitcoin, it converts electrical energy to financial energy. And the problem that's introduced by proof of stake is, let's say you have a system where there's a smart contract system designed to help your insurance pay your doctor. And so you pay through this system to be reimbursed or pay an amount that the insurance company has allowed you to pay. And the system also allows the doctor to safely secure your medical records against tampering. So that this in a proof of stake system, the entire network can be spoofed, allowing the attacker to get a copy of your medical records, also to collect the payment on the fake network and replay, if architected properly, replay the payment transaction on the main chain and steal your money too. So with proof of work, the metric that would prevent them from being able to spoof the main network is called the difficulty, which you know from mining, right? It's that the hash of the block has to have a certain number of zeros in it. And you can check that the number of zeros in the hash matches the recommendation from the previous block. But in the proof of stake network, there is no such difficulty metric. It's just, look, I own this address that has this many Ethereum in it, and they might own that many Ethereum on a fake chain. It doesn't prove the authenticity of the chain. And so the attack vectors that are possible with Ethereum, both because of proof of stake and because of address reuse, prevent it from being a serious contender at supporting the global economy that we have.
So, yeah, starting to wrap up here, is there anything else you want to mention or want people to know about Emerald Foundation and what you guys are doing there?
Well, let's see. We are still in the formative stages. It's just me and a handful of other people that are super passionate about the project. I am super grateful I'm super blessed and grateful to be working on this stuff. If you want to get in touch with me, if you're interested and as passionate about it as I am, and you want to be a part of it, I would say look me up on LinkedIn. My name is Greg McKeska. I guess you see it on the screen there. The organization is called the Emerald Foundation. You won't find Intaglio Architecture or Emerald Labs in the public circle yet, but we do have the Emerald Foundation has a LinkedIn page. I'd love to see your face, get to know you, and learn more about you and how we can work together.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks so much for being on the show today, Greg. For everybody listening, don't forget to like and subscribe if you're on YouTube, if you found value here. If you're listening on a podcasting platform, please do leave a 5-star review. The podcast is new and still growing, so that helps out a lot. And there'll also be a link in the description to subscribe to the Hard Money Dispatch newsletter. So I hope you gained something from this and learned something from it. And if you did, you can also share it with someone else you think might be interested. And I will see you next time.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.